Maroney Zone Radio, the award-winning view and interview show with your host, Jeff Roney. And we've invited the lovely, the wonderful Sarah Kamen into the Roney Zone. How are you, Sarah?
Great. Thank you.
Well, I got to tell you, I'm a North American who kind of is still a little oblivious to the whole Canadian scene.
Okay.
I know about Rush. I know
That's all you need to know, really.
Well, I know about Alanis Morissette.
Okay.
Bryan Adams.
Yep.
Celine something. Celine.
It'll come to you.
Celine Dion. That's it. But I got to tell you, bumping into Kelly G, who bumped into you, has been a real kind of an eye opener. And we'll kind of talk about the whole music scene in Canada and stuff. But I got to say, your voice just knocks me out.
Oh, thank you. That's awesome.
I think the thing for people in general is things like American Idol has really kind of ruined us because, you know, the first couple episodes, we're just kind of looking for the funny people, looking for the people who can't sing, blah, 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 that kind of a thing. And I think when someone with real talent comes along, we are ready to be dismissive. When did you know you could sing?
I actually started singing when I was about four. Mm-hmm. And I used to sing along to all these really cheesy, you know, 80s records like Debbie Gibson and Tiffany and Sharon Lowes and Bram. And but I didn't want anyone to know. So I used to stuff a pillow under my door. And I actually did that pretty much nightly from the time I was four until I was 14. I loved singing that much. But I didn't want anyone to hear me. Probably for what you're talking about, this judgment, you know. Mm-hmm. I was worried about the judgment.
Well,
at age four.
Well, I think that's the thing is when you have a gift, sometimes you don't know that it's any good. It's hard to kind of base it on something. When was your first public singing in front of a group somewhere?
Probably when I was about 14, because what I did is I came out of my room and I said to my mom, you know, there's this talent show at school and I really want to sing in it. I was in grade 9 at the time. And my mom said, well, you know, can you sing? And I was like, I don't know, maybe. So I sung a Celine Dion song for her. There you go. That's that Canadian Celine you were asking
about. There you go.
So I sung a Celine Dion song for her and she freaked out and said, oh my gosh, do you want singing lessons? Like, what are we going to do with this? And, you know, do you want to pursue this? And I said, yeah, I do. I love it more than anything. And so my first public performance was when I was about 14 at school. And then quite quickly, I got into singing lessons and lots of recitals. And I had an amazing teacher. And she got me out there singing a lot. But yeah, probably not until I was about 14. Yeah.
I think we've all had mentors along the way. How important was your mentor and what was your mentor's name?
Oh my gosh, that's hard. I think my first mentor would probably be my first singing teacher. Mm. Her name's Linda Cara. Mm-hmm. And she was so vital in the process because not only was she about, you know, making sure my voice was really well taken care of and making sure I was healthy mentally and physically to sing, but also just like reminding me how important humility is and how important it is to really work for what you accomplish. And I think that was probably, you know, she wasn't one of those people who was all about the easy sell and, you know, marketable and commercial. She really wanted me to nurture my art and my talent. And I think that was just invaluable for me. And I pass that on to my students now. Mm. So I think Linda was definitely musically my absolute top mentor. Yeah.
The one thing that I really like about you is when I listen to you sing, I kind of have a note that I think you're going to go to, and you choose something different.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't say this, but I mean, you impress me because you're a very creative singer. And you have a real control to your voice. And again, you know, I just want to say this, I'm probably going to make a lot of enemies, but I think with singing and singers and entertainers these days, I think we've got a good PR person, you know, just kind of pushing stuff out there.
Absolutely.
And, I think with some real talent, we're missing that. I think, you know, we get some blue eyes and some extensions jumping around and we don't really have, you know, anything, you know, going back to, you know, 60s or 70s, you know, when I think.
I totally know what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know what? I think about that. I think the thing that it's really important to realize, and I know this about the Canadian scene and the American scene as well, because I'm huge into lots of American artists. Mm-hmm. There's great stuff out there. It just takes a little longer to find it.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's remarkable talent. And you're lucky to have people like yourself and Kelly G who are actually looking for this kind of talent. I mean, that is invaluable to independent musicians. Mm-hmm. But the good stuff is out there. It's just not on the radio most of the time.
Well, let's kind of jump in. We're going to kind of jump around. I'm sorry about that. But there was a time when people would have killed for a label to sign them. That would have been just the peak. And it's my opinion that a lot of the money would have never gone to the artist. It would have gone to guys that smoke cigars and put their feet up on a desk on a high office that just did very little to nothing. But I think Napster, I think some file sharing, legal, good file sharing, that's approved, MySpace and other social networks have really changed the playing field.
Absolutely. 100%.
When are you looking to be signed, or what is your goal when you see it, you say, I've arrived?
You know what? I think being signed is not the goal anymore. It really isn't. Mm-hmm. I mean, that obviously is, if it's a good deal with a good company, and I don't even, to be honest, really know what that means at this point in the industry.
Yeah.
I guess it's appealing, but really more with a good, solid, independent label that signs smaller acts and only a few of them and really nurtures them. That's appealing to me. A label like ATO Records, which Patty Griffin is on, mm-hmm. I think it's run by Dave Matthews still. Mm-hmm. That is a really appealing thing for me because they sign very specific acts, very few acts, in a certain genre of a certain quality and caliber, and that is appealing to me. But really, I just want my music to be out there. I would love to hear it on television shows and in movies. I just want people to hear my music and feel touched by it and feel moved by it, because that's the whole point of music. I mean, the money is here, neither here nor there. I mean, it's not even necessarily my career. I'm studying to be a psychotherapist, and I have a master's degree, and, you know, I have a whole other side to my life. Hmm. So really, for me, it's just a matter of people feeling touched and moved by my music. And I don't have a big goal in mind. I mean, I would love to be touring around the world and playing my music to people all over the place and everything, you know, that any musician would want. But I don't think that I can't be happy if I don't have that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're a great segue-er, and I'm going to have to send you a check.
Always welcome. I'm an independent artist. So.
No problem. I have to tell you that I have a theory. I think everybody has theories. I think God gives everyone a gift. And I think when they find it, that's a huge step in their life. But I think when they use it, and they use it well, that it's magical.
I totally agree with you. I was just teaching at something this week in Toronto with some incredible artists. Ron Sexsmith was there, and Stephen Page from the Bare Naked Ladies, and Blair Packham. And I was teaching, it's called Song Studio. And it's like a week-long summer songwriting workshop. And I was telling all my students there, because my master's is in performance psychology. And so I work a lot with independent performers and, you know, perform dancers, musicians, athletes, actors, whatever. And I was telling my students exactly that, you know, instead of feeling anxious about what people are going to think of you, recognize the fact that you have a gift that a lot of people don't have and would kill for. I have friends who say, if only I had a creative outlet. And they don't. And I think, like, just to recognize that it is a gift, and you are sort of, you know, you're just kind of a conduit for your emotions, right? It's just, you're just trying to get things out. You're sort of just the medium, you know? And I think that is really important to recognize. And again, that's something that I think sets musicians apart who come across as really egotistical and cocky and, you know, I've earned this and I deserve this, versus those who are true artists. I think there's really an understanding of that separation there.
Well, I tell you, me and millions of people sat and watched and rewatched and rewatched. I hope I don't have to pay anybody. I watched Susan Boyle, who, you know, strolled out there, spinning around, you know, acting silly. And when she started to sing, when Paul Potts started to sing, there was a point that it hit you. And that was that point when I really started to really get philosophical and say that's the point when you realize why you're here.
Yeah,
is
absolutely.
Is that gift that's on 10 and now gets to be shared. And just to watch, you know, Simon's reaction, Amanda's reaction, Pierce's reaction to these two people who you may have never even wanted to talk to on the street. But when they get up there and they use their gift, and we could talk about Hendrix, we could talk about writers, painters, it doesn't matter. But when they got up there and used their gift, boom, magic happened. And, you know, how did you feel when you watched the Susan Boyle or Paul Potts?
You know what? I'm so thrilled when things like that happen. I can't even tell you how thrilled I am. I mean, yes, there is an element of the media trying to, you know, the producers of the show pushing these people on us, blah, blah, blah. But you're right. You can't dispute amazing talent. And mm-hmm. the fact is, who cares? We're so focused on what artists look like and their image and their this and their that. A voice is a voice.
Right.
And my favorite artists are not my favorite artists because they're the most beautiful people I've ever seen. They're my favorite artists because when they sing and when they play their songs, I'm transported.
Mm.
So I don't care who gives me the shivers, what they look like, what they're wearing. Who cares? Like, this is what I don't understand. Music has become about something completely unrelated to music. And it's become almost more about that than
right.
about the craft itself. So yeah, when honestly, people knock American Idol, America's Got Talent, and Canadian Idol, and all these shows. But honestly, when it's unveiling true talent, it's magical. Who cares where you find it? If, for instance, my guitar player on my record is an incredible singer-songwriter in his own right, and if you want to check out someone amazing, he's a great example. His name's Oliver Pigott, and he was a finalist on Canadian Idol last year.
Hmm.
I swear to you, of the thousands of songwriters I've heard in my life, his talent is unparalleled. It's amazing. And who knows of him, right? Like, he went on a show like Idol so that he would get his name out there and get some exposure. And, you know, that's why I think those shows are so ridiculously invaluable, is that even though they are trying to produce something and sell something, really, look at some of the artists that make it on there every year and make it really far. They're not the most beautiful. They're the people that slip through the cracks with the record companies.
Yeah.
So yeah. I think those shows, honestly, I think they're invaluable. And several of the artists that have come off of American Idol, Kelly Clarkson, Carrie Underwood, David Cook, and now Adam Lambert, you've got some unbelievable talent there.
Mm-hmm.
Jaw-dropping talent. So why is that a bad thing? Who cares how they get discovered? I'm happy I have their records now. You know?
Eric Clapton said that some of the best times that he had as a writer when he wrote his songs was the saddest times of his life. And also probably times that were wrapped up in love. What moments in your life does something happen and then you get that muse kind of nudge and you know that you have to grab a pen? Is it always love? Is it walking by somebody and saying, that's interesting? Are there certain things that kind of pique you, or is it random?
You know what? It's both. It is random. There are certain moments I've had that have been so magical that I want to tell you about them because they're just so great. But the love thing is interesting. You know, I think people always say, oh, everything's a love song. But, you know, everything is a love song. Even if it's not a love song, it's still like all we're all writing about is connection, human relationships. Even if we're writing songs about the war on terror, or it's still all about love. It's about connection. It's about caring for our human, you know, fellow humans, right? So I think like not writing love songs, I think people more mean like relationship songs. For me, relationships are a huge influence, of course, as an artist. I mean, romantic relationships, my relationship with my friends, my family. But, you know, the more amazing moments are the ones that are really the lightning strike kind of moments, the light bulb moments where you're lying in bed and it's 3 o'clock in the morning and you wake up from a dream and you have to jump out of bed and you literally catapult out of bed
mm-hmm.
because, you know, to the other side of the room to grab your guitar. Those moments are magic. And I think like I've had a few of those recently, and oddly enough, you know, the inspirations come from the oddest places, like a woman I met on Twitter you know, sort of through a connection we had through Jan Arden. We both like Jan Arden a lot. She told me a story about how one of Jan Arden's songs reminded her. Jan Arden's a very well-known Canadian artist, if you don't know. She told me how one of Jan Arden's songs reminded her of something that had happened at her wedding. And she tells me this story. And basically, it was just that she'd had this love interest when she was a teenager. Mm-hmm. She met him quite young, and he was a very musical, artistic, creative type. And then as they were growing up, you know, they sort of grew apart, and he moved away. He took a train way out west in Canada. She didn't really know where he went. And on her wedding day, he came back. She married another man, and on her wedding day, I think she was about 20 or 21, this man that she had met when she was a kid came back and handed her 20 yellow roses and a note that said, "It should have been me." Hmm. And I said to her, "I don't know you, but if that's not a song, I don't know what's a song." Hmm. And so in the last month or so, I wrote the song. It came out in, you know, 10 minutes. Most of my songs come out in 5 or 10 minutes. And it came out in about 10 or 15 minutes, and I wrote it, and I managed to get it onto the record, which was awesome. And, you know, that's such a random inspiration, but that's how it's been my whole life. I just, something moves me. Anytime I feel a shiver about something or something moves me, a movie, a story, I just grab my pen and grab my guitar and, you know, feel at home and just start strumming and see what happens. So it can be anything. It can be really planned or really random.
Does the melody come first or lyrics, and then you put the melody around it?
Usually I think of a chord progression first. I'm not a really, you know, amazing guitar player, but I play rhythm guitar well enough to accompany myself. And I try to think of a chord progression, and I don't try to go crazy. Something that drives me nuts with some artists is how they're always trying to just do the Joni Mitchell thing and create crazy amounts of chords that no one's ever heard of. And I love Joni Mitchell, but I don't think everyone needs to try to be Joni Mitchell.
Right.
I think, you know, sometimes it's nice just to write a really natural melody that just flows and sounds, you know, it resolves nicely, and it makes sense. And that's kind of, I look for melodies like that, melodies that when I hear them, I think, God, I'd love to listen to that over and over again. And then usually as I'm strumming away, I'm kind of humming, a lyric or two will come out, I'll have a general theme in my head of what I want to write about. Sometimes it stays exactly that, and sometimes it morphs into something completely different. But typically for me, the melody comes first with the chords. Although sometimes I'm on the subway, you know, taking the subway or the bus somewhere, and I get an idea for a lyric, and, you know, that happens as well, where I have to then build something around it. So it really, I mean, I guess it is relatively random.
Have you ever had half a song and you just couldn't work the rest of it, and then you set it aside and you come back later? Or is it kind of all there and you just got to kind of catch it?
You know what? Both. I think my best songs tend to be the ones where it just comes out in 5 or 10 minutes and it's mm-hmm. done. Mm-hmm. I sometimes go back and edit, but to be honest, I'm not a big editor. I think I have had instances, quite a few, where I've written a part here and a part there, and something I wrote 10 years ago makes it into something I wrote this year. And, you know, it really depends. It's just, it's interesting how you do store all those ideas in your head, even if you don't realize it. And suddenly you're writing something and you think, oh God, remember that lyric I wrote back in 1999? Wouldn't that go perfectly here? You know, and it's, so yeah, it really depends. I'm not a big collaborator with other artists. Mm. I don't really collaborate at all. I tend to write entirely on my own. So yeah, it kind of does all fall onto me, but typically for me, long story short, my songs tend to come out really fast and they're done.
Mm. How many notepads do you have?
Oh my God. that's an amazing question. You're so great, Jeff. Your questions are awesome. Let me think. I'm looking right now at about 10 on my desk.
Okay.
I must have 20, 30, and they're all on the go. I mean, I can never find anything I'm looking for, but...
Well, I'm a writer, and so I've got 30, 40 here, there, everywhere, and, you know, it's just little bits here and there. Collaborating right now with somebody on a story I wrote in my head 20 years ago. So mm-hmm. it just the whole capturing of it. Do you use a smartphone to write things out, or do you still kind of take a pen and write it on a piece of paper?
What smartphone?
Well. Do you use a notepad on your phone?
No, I'm all about the pen and paper.
Okay.
Yeah. I sometimes will transfer stuff to my computer and sit in front of my computer with my guitar because it's faster to make changes rather than scribbling things out. And it's faster to type than to write. So if I don't want to lose an idea, I have like a little tape recorder, but I don't usually use it. I tend to find like if an idea is good enough, I'll remember it. Mm-hmm. You know, if I forget it, I kind of think, yeah, it probably wasn't that great. You know, that's yeah. how I do it.
Have you ever considered doing the almost polar opposite of the style of music maybe you're comfortable with?
Yeah, people have said to me I should be a rock singer, and they'd love to hear me do Pat Benatar style. And, you know, the thing about my voice is that I was trained in musical theater and some opera and top 40 pop. And then I went on to this folkier kind of thing because my favorite artists are typically female singer-songwriter types, Americana, Canadiana types. But I also sing jazz. I love singing jazz music. I'm pretty open, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I just love singing. Yeah. I don't care. The only thing that limits me right now is my guitar playing. But because I have aligned with Oliver that I was talking about before,
yeah.
he is so much more varied. Like what you're going to hear on my new record is so drastically different than a lot of what I've done before. Only because I had this person who could really adapt my songs, make them funkier, make them more soulful, make them a little rockier. So I'm open. I just love singing. Mm-hmm. I don't care the style, to be honest.
Now, you, I looked down at my Twitter account and you almost jumped out of my screen telling me about the Music in Me, this new CD that you're working on. Tell me about it. What's different about it? What happened?
Well, it's kind of a fun story, and I hope the person that inspired it hears the story sometime. We have to try to get the message to her.
Okay.
My favorite artist in the world is Patty Griffin, and, like, absolute idol. I mean, you say mentor. I've met her, but I mean, I wouldn't say she's my mentor, but she's an absolute idol. And when I first heard her sing, I was 16 or 17, and she had just put out her first record called Living with Ghosts. And Living with Ghosts was an album that was entirely guitar and vocals. That was it. I think there might have been a few other little things in there here and there, but generally it's guitar and vocals the whole way through. She puts out this record. I believe it was recorded in her basement or like some sort of home studio, and it was absolute magic. It was the best. It is the best album I have ever heard in my life, hands down, Living with Ghosts. So she was approximately 29, I believe, when she put that record out, and I'm 29 now. And I really had this goal to go completely against what I've done in the past, which is try to busy up all of my songs. And I aligned with Oliver in January and sort of, I've known him for about 10 years, but we've constantly lived in different countries. I was living in Scotland for a while. He was in the States, then he was in the UK as well. So we haven't been in the same place. So I sort of re-met him in January, connected with him, and we just started playing cover songs here and there together, just singing together. And we went, this is interesting. We've got quite a nice musical connection here. So I started thinking, I really need to make a new record. And I had just left my PhD program, which was just horrible. So I thought, well, I've got all this time, and I've got this great new guitarist in my life, and what do I want to do? And I thought, I want to make a record that is all about my songs and my singing and the arrangements of the songs. And that's it. And I really did that inspired by Patty Griffin with Living with Ghosts, being, you know, the same age and the same vibe. And I really sort of wanted to, in a way, pay tribute to her because her record, absolutely more than anything else in my life, changed my life. That one record and made me want to be a singer-songwriter. I never played a guitar before I heard that record. So that was the goal for this record. I wanted to make something that was just all about the actual songs and my voice, because that, I think, is my strength. And I didn't want to try to fill it with drums and bass. And I love that stuff, but it's got its place. And I didn't think its place was on this record. And what's happened is the record is now done. We just finished mixing it. I'm so proud of it. I've never said this about my records before. I mean, I love them. They're my babies. But I've never felt such a sense of pride and happiness and absolute elation with anything I've ever recorded. It is the most authentic, genuine, emotional thing I've ever put out. And I listen to it and I just go, I really feel like I'm really coming into my own a bit as a songwriter. And that, after 10 years, 12 years of writing songs, very religiously, writing hundreds of songs, to be able to feel that and say that and admit it, is so phenomenal for me. So this record is just, it's the one word I can think of is to say it's authentic. It is exactly what you'll get if you come to a show to see me play.
Do you ever get down to the States?
My family lives in California, my dad's family. I don't get down nearly as much as I'd like to. I love New York. I love San Francisco. I love Florida. Like, I've been all over. I love Vegas. It's fun. But I don't get down nearly as much as I would like to. I'd love to do some touring down there. I'd love to get down there more often. It's just, you know, finances and being an independent artist, it's hard, you know?
Sure. Well, I got to tell you, you rock. This has been just a pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, for me too, Jeff. You're a fantastic interviewer. I'm so impressed.
Thank you. And I definitely wanted folks to not only hear you sing, but also hear what you had to say. And you're just a great gal. And
thanks so much.
So we're going to play a couple of cuts that you've been so kind to let me play. And I will keep everybody up on what you're doing and where you're going. And if you could, as we end here, let folks know how they can find you on the internet and maybe Twitter or whatever. So,
all right. Yeah, I'm on MySpace at myspace.com/Sarah Kamin. So it's S-A-R-A-K-A-M-I-N. And I'm also on Twitter, twitter.com/Sarah Kamin, facebook.com/Sarah Kamin Music. So I'm all over the place. Just Google Sarah Kamin. You'll find me.
All right. As promised, we're going to play two cuts by permission of Sarah. And the first one is called Already Gotten In. And the second one's called Four Leaf Clover. And I hope you enjoy it. And please check out her work. She's a great artist. So here we go.
Must know I never meant to, and I'm so sorry if I ever let you down, down, down. You are a mystery, you are hypocrisy, but I need you. I wanna see what happens when our two squares become a circle. I wanna know the difference when gray becomes black and white. I wanna understand just why you make me so damn nervous, and why I love kissing you by candlelight. And baby, this is all so confusing, but honey, it's my heart you've been abusing. I know you're real scared, but baby, we've both been there, and you can't shut somebody out who's already gotten in. The ceiling, it's a rainy Sunday evening, and I'm wishing that your body was laying next to mine. Well, it's such a little thing, but when you are not here, it stings, and I'm left alone pondering what's happening here. And baby, this is all so confusing, but honey, it's my heart you've been abusing. Shut somebody out who's already gotten in. Every relationship, well, sacrifice, but baby, at this point I'd settle for a compromise. But you won't bend, you won't budge, you swear you'll never break. I'm left trying to figure out how much more of this bullshit I'm gonna take.
You are listening to Roni's Own Radio.
Could be happening. like a movie scene. Mostly it's better left unsaid. I try and I cry and I wait to hear your not enough to show me I'm right. So fuck it over, this four-leaf clover. I just need a little sigh. And heads or tails and hairs or snakes, I don't have much time to ask. So tell me stories about all the things that I do to let you down. And I'll try harder, yeah. I'll get smarter, hoping that you will come around. Need a little sigh. And heads or tails and hairs or snakes, I don't have much time to wait. To wait. So fuck it over, this four-leaf clover. I just need a little sigh.
Thank you for listening to Roni's Own Radio. Please visit our website at jrdonline.com and drop us an email at jeff.roni@gmail.com. Thank you very much and see you next time on Roni's Own Radio.